It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 181 of Radio TCX, your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy. I'm Tim Dugan, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Carson Ray.
Hello.
And John McDermid.
Hi there.
And this week we're going to do a pretty interesting how-to. We're going to do how to lose games of X-Wing. Carson, you want to explain this one a little bit?
Yeah, Radio TCX is your place for the premier X-Wing advice. And so this is the advice everyone wants. How do you lose these games of X-Wing? You know, how am I going to do this more often and just really improve that part of my game? And we're going to hold nothing back. We're going to share all the secrets on how you can lose as many games of X-Wing as you want.
Yeah, just short of making a top 10 list. We're going to cover every area of losing that you could possibly want. So I think this is going to be a fun one to talk about. So let's get right into it. Okay, so to explain our premise a little bit better, the reason we're going to focus on how you lose games of X-Wing is because I think there's a general misunderstanding a lot of people have is they have a hard time understanding why a game went bad for them. So it's important to know when you lose a game of X-Wing, you want to take something away from that. You want to understand why you lost that game. And I think a lot of people don't understand the different factors that go into a play because there's a lot of different factors that can actually cause you to lose a game.
Right. I mean, and a lot of them, you know, can happen pretty early in the game. And so you might not really understand why you lost when you're just looking at the results of the, you know, the last 15 minutes of the game when there was some critical mistakes made early. That really did contribute the most to your loss. And understanding why you lose games is important for so many reasons. I mean, first off, that's how you improve, really being critical of your play style, identifying the mistakes you made so that, you know, you can try not to make them in future games. That's massively important. That's how you get better. But also, you know, when we look at these big events, you know, you have to play a lot of games of X-Wing, and you really can't afford to lose too many games. And so, you know, just being aware of all the different ways a game can go wrong really helps you steer your game in the right direction.
So the three of us kind of pooled our knowledge here and looked back at, you know, our careers in X-Wing thus far and tried to identify the main factors that contribute to losing games of X-Wing. And I think this is going to be a beneficial list because I think once you understand why you lose, you can improve your play from that point forward. Once you start making mistakes, if you can recognize mistakes, you're less likely to make them in the future.
Right. And all these reasons we're going to go through, like, I think I've been guilty of all of them.
Yeah, and even still, like, there's still some that get me just because, you know, you've built up play styles over time, and there's still mistakes that I continue to make that I've been trying to work on and, like, improve upon. So let's start this list off here. So the first one we have is one that's, I think, very relevant, especially to players like me and Carson who have been favoring aces recently. This one is misunderstanding time.
Yeah, so time is one of the biggest components in a game of X-Wing. Most typical games run 75 minutes, and then when you get into the top cuts at tournaments, the final rounds are usually 2 hours long. So understanding how time is going to interact with your game and the sorts of things you need to do in specific amounts of time are really going to help you develop better game strategies, which is why, you know, when you lose a game, having a better understanding of why that was can really help you have better time management in the future games.
And time management is actually hugely important. And I don't think a lot of people realize, especially when you're starting out in X-Wing or playing early competitive games, how much time can impact your strategies. Because right now I've been favoring the high ground list Carson flew at Gen Con. And that one depends on, you know, using the full length of time. Not that I try to waste a lot of time, but I generally need the full 75 minutes in a standard game in order to get a win if I'm going to win. Locally, we have a lot of tournaments that run just 60-minute rounds, and those are dramatically harder for me because my list is prone to, I can't be overly aggressive because I'll lose ships, but if I don't take enough points by the time we hit the 60-minute mark, I'm going to lose that game either way. And that's been a pretty common trend for me where I'll get down to the 60-minute mark, I'll lose the game, and I'll go, man, if I had just 15 more minutes, I think I'd be able to take this. I'm in a good position. I just couldn't push the damage through fast enough.
Yeah, and I found that it seems, oddly enough, that time flows differently when you're playing X-Wing. So, you know, depending on what your list is or what your matchup might be, that could very well be the fastest 75 minutes of your life, or it could feel like one of those final matchups where it's 2 hours long. Kind of just depends on what the pace of the game is and how turns are going. So having a better understanding of that shift as well is really big.
Right. I mean, so for the aces, you know, your goal is, okay, don't give up points. Yeah, I just got to protect my points and then, you know, find opportunities throughout the course of the 75 minutes to score points where you can. I usually don't think about the points that I've scored when playing aces, you know, really until I get to about the 20-minute mark. I'm just focused on, you know, what ships are posing the greatest threat to my aces. How am I going to protect them the best? You know, things don't always go according to plan, and, you know, sometimes you give up a bunch of points, and so you have to realize, okay, now what do I need to score to get this win? But that's the general game plan.
Well, and it's interesting because we talk about the three main list archetypes in X-Wing: aces, mid-range, and efficiency, and they all have to use time differently. So like we said, aces generally have to focus on protecting their own points and trying to, you know, gain points through run-and-gun efforts. You don't want to lose anything on your end, but you do need to put damage out and start to take some points so that even if you don't win by a wide margin, you still have more points destroyed than your opponent. It's different, though, for the different list archetypes, because mid-range lists are generally very good at trading up. They've got an ace and then some efficiency backing them up, typically. So they're really good at, you know, trying to get damage out at an okay rate so that you're always just trading up. That, you know, no matter where we're at in the time game, I'm actually just, the pieces I'm losing are less valuable than the pieces I'm taking.
Right. I think mid-range lists don't have to worry about time as much as other lists. I think they're usually good at kind of all stages of the time. They might fall off a little bit towards the end. It kind of depends on what their matchup is against. I think efficiency lists are incredibly strong in the early game. They're usually bringing a lot of offense just based off the volume of ships they have. So they can score a lot of points early, but then they really have to pay attention to the time at the end of the game, because that's where suddenly they can lose a lot of ships really quickly.
And it's fun to put aces up against efficiency in terms of how they use time, because it's interesting that efficiency generally has the most value at the beginning of the game early on, and then as time progresses, you start to lose value as those ships start to disappear. Whereas aces may not necessarily have the same amount of raw value for the points you're paying at the start of the game, but they tend to, if played properly, maintain their value throughout the course of the game. So that when they want to get to the late game, still have pieces on the board, then they're at a huge advantage. Whereas efficiency wants to be, you know, pushing out a lot of damage early on so that they can not lose a bunch of value if the game goes to time or goes to, you know, more than 60 minutes.
And that's why it's important too to understand, depending on what archetype you're using, if you're trying to play the long game or the short game. You know, typically with like an efficiency list or even something that has like alpha striking abilities, generally something like that is going for the short game. Like you said, Carson, efficiency lists aren't very good at protecting points. So if they can, you know, make that game, you know, go pretty short and just take as many points as they can off the board right away, then that list has the advantage, you know, as time progresses. Kind of the inverse is the same with aces. You don't want to get too aggressive right away, because what that'll do is put your aces in a dangerous spot. And, you know, if you're down to two out of your three aces, you know, within the first, you know, quarter or even third of the game, it's not a game that's looking good. So preparing to kind of buckle down and do your strafing runs and get that damage in and play the long game is usually a pretty good strategy with aces.
I think I see this happen a lot with the Separatist swarms, you know, where, you know, those vulture droids or hyenas can really push out a lot of damage with energy shell charges, you know, but they only have like three hit points. And so you can score a lot of points early. But then, you know, kind of halfway through the game, there's kind of a turn where, you know, you kind of lose the potential to push through a bunch of offense. And that does give your opponent kind of a window where they can start taking out these vulture droids. And, you know, when your opponent's able to put offensive pressure on the vultures, they go away pretty quickly. And so you kind of have to identify, you know, okay, early I definitely want to put on that offensive pressure. But sometimes there's a shift where now I have to focus on protecting my points. You know, I need to block with my vultures, the damaged ones, you know, keep them from being destroyed. and just really minimize the points that my opponent's scoring. So it's kind of the opposite of ace play, where it's like early, I want to be aggressive, get a bunch of damage. And then late game, I want to flip and play a little bit more defensively.
And John, you've been running efficiency recently. You were running four arcs in the Republic faction at Gen Con. Can you tell us a little bit about how you were perceiving time, you know, for those matchups? Because I'm sure you had to play a lot of, you know, aces in mid-range.
Yeah, so this one's actually pretty interesting because while the four arcs kind of operates as an efficiency list, and I think this is probably just because I'm so used to flying the ace archetype, but the four arcs do pretty well across time in a game. I had three of them with the 7th Fleet Gunner to kind of boost my offensive output right away, which gives me that early game advantage like most efficiency lists have. But the arcs have low agility and can take damage really quick, so you're kind of relying on that 9 hit points to kind of soak up damage long enough for you to get away for a turn or two or set up some strategic blocks to try to come around and get that offensive back. The nice thing about the arcs is that they have that rear arc, so even while you are protecting your points and trying to give yourself a good setup for following turns, you can still put out some offensive damage. It's not as good because you've maybe spent your 7th Fleet Gunner charges, or you know, you have that reduced red die out the back. But yeah, it's really interesting with that list. I think the mid game is really important for the four arcs, just because at that point you might have one that's, you know, down to the last hull, or you might even have one that's dead. And with just four ships, I mean, you really have to plan and be careful about what you're doing with the other three, because if you get those arcs caught, they can burn down pretty fast.
Well, and I think that's another interesting point, too, because we have these general thresholds, too, but obviously there's a ton of different lists people can build. And there are ways you can kit out lists, even if they fall in, like, the classic three archetypes, to have them work the other direction, you know? So if you're running an aces list with quick draw, you've got some pretty serious damage output you could deal maybe around the mid game point after you've gone, you know, already done some damage at range, and then you move in with quick draw for some kill shots. So you can have aces that can tend a little bit towards the middle there, so they're not entirely dependent on the late game. And like you're saying, John, you can have efficiency lists that are clearly the most value they get is in the early game, but they have ways of maintaining their relevance and not losing a lot of efficiency, whether it's hit points or having additional firing arcs. One point I do think is interesting, and this was coming up a bit. People have come up to me while I'm watching a game, if they haven't been able to watch like a top table at a big event or during a stream, and they're always asking the question, well, who's winning? And this is an interesting point to me because it can mean different things. And one point I think is necessary to understand, especially in the context of time, is that someone being ahead on points, you know, meaning they've destroyed more points than their opponent has, does not necessarily, in my mind, correlate to winning the game. Because there's so many different factors that can come into play that even if you're up by some amount of points, that doesn't necessarily mean it looks like you're going to win.
Right. I think I see this a lot, you know, where, okay, a player's up by like 20 points, you know, but they have like two X-Wings, and really one good shot could have one of those X-Wings. So if you think you're winning, but, you know, your ships have a pretty good likelihood of being halved or destroyed and giving up more points, you really have to account for that within the score, or do everything possible to prevent giving up those points.
And the time factor is huge here too, where if you're ahead on points, but the enemy ships are all behind you and you don't have a good way to re-engage them, well, the time matters a lot here. If you've only got, you know, 2 minutes left in the game, maybe you're going to run away and just try and take some defensive actions to hold on to your points. But if there's a good, you know, 30, 35 minutes left in the game, that's not an option, because your ships might not be able to defend that long. You have to suddenly make decisions to turn around, which means your ships might be vulnerable and you might lose some more points. So paying attention to time here is hugely important. And just because you're ahead on points or behind on points doesn't mean you're necessarily winning or losing a given game. Nothing's finalized until we hit that, you know, 75-minute time is called mark. All right, so time's a huge factor here, but let's dive into some of the other areas of why you lose X-Wing games. So one of them is really important. It's giving up key ships early on.
Right. I mean, so this is a big failure on defense. And, you know, sometimes you got to take a risk and put your ship in a bad spot, but, you know, usually you want it to pay off. Where this costs you the game is where you just really don't get any payoff for giving up one of your ships.
And a huge part of X-Wing is setting up favorable exchanges so that even if you know you're going to take damage or potentially lose a ship, you want to make sure that you're trading for preferably more value than you're losing.
Yeah, so like if you're an ace player going up against an efficiency list, a failure to trade would be like losing a Soontir Fel for, you know, a Vulture Droid. That payoff is not as good because in the grand scheme of things, Soontir Fel as a piece is more meaningful than one Vulture Droid in a swarm. And if you give up that valuable piece and there's not a meaningful payoff, then, you know, something's usually gone wrong for you in your win condition.
Well, and it's not even necessarily a point trade-off, too. There can be trade-offs where the two ships are roughly equivalent in point value, but they're not roughly equivalent in what they do for each of their respective lists, right? Sure. So that if Soontir Fel takes out, a T-70 X-Wing that has a similar point value, that's not necessarily a good thing. If you lose Soontir Fel for that, the T-70 might not have been a hugely important part of the synergy of the other list, whereas Soontir Fel might have been your main damage output source.
Right. I mean, so you really want to understand, you know, okay, when we're trading ships, what ships are going to be most important at the end game? You want to take away your opponent's end game ships while still holding on to your end game ships. So if you're playing a mid-range list and you have your one closer ship, and, you know, even if you trade up on points, but you lose your closer, that can cost you in the end.
Yeah, and this is where you want to keep an eye on what your win condition is. And you'll hear people talk a lot about win conditions. You need to know what your list does and what you need to do with your list in order to win the game. And if you're doing a mid-range list where you depend on a closer like that and you lose your closer, well, if you lose your win condition, you're probably going to lose the game. And again, part of that goes back to identifying, what is your win condition here? We can kind of go back to time on that one, too, where if your win condition is defending points, well, then you need to protect points late into the end of the game. But if your main win condition is scoring a bunch of points early on, a lot of that's going to focus on the early part of the game.
Right. I mean, you know, looking at my Gen Con list, that Anakin Skywalker was my main source of damage potential. And games where I lost him or he took a bunch of damage and had to run away, you know, I just would usually fall behind on the damage race. And Obi-Wan and Rick have, you know, a lot less consistent offense. So losing Anakin early could really cost me the game.
So it's pretty easy to say that giving up key ships is a pretty quick route to losing a game, though there's kind of an opposite side to this too, where if you're not putting enough pressure on your opponent, that can also cause you to lose games, right? Because John, you were flying the four arcs, and that's a list that's really good at putting pressure on an opponent because you've got some really heavy damage output with the 7th fleet gunner, and you've got, you know, 8 firing arcs across 4 ships. So can you tell us a little bit about how pressure looked in your games?
Yeah, so one of the cool things about the 4 arc list was that the 4th arc had the Commander Cody gunner on it instead of 7th Fleet. And his ability is kind of unique. So when you perform an attack and it misses, if hit or crit results were neutralized, then the defender gets a strain token. So you usually take that shot first. And I'm never one to complain about, you know, making hits happen. But in the event that that attack looks like it might miss, well, now my opponent has a decision. Do I just soak up the damage from this shot, or do I negate it and then take the strain token? And then on my next shot, which is probably going to have 7th Fleet Gunner to give one of the arcs an extra die, I'm going to have reduced agility. So that's usually one of the biggest forms of pressure that the arcs put on the opponent. One of the other ones is just the fact that it's 4 arcs. So, I mean, like, that's a lot of offense that they're going to have to chew through in order to make sure that they have an even exchange later on. Just because those arcs are so beefy, it's pretty intimidating to see 4 of them roll at you. So, and that time on target with that rear arc is so good that they have to think really hard about their positioning and their target priority to make sure that they're removing my pieces before I can just wipe theirs off the table. So overall, I think just, and this is the case with any number of large ships or just a large number of ships, is just a general sense of pressure to remove pieces and take away that offensive output.
Right, John. I think even when you are playing aces, you're pretty good at just putting pressure on. I think that's something that I really still need to work on. When playing aces, I think overly focus on protecting my ships. If there's turns where, you know, I don't have any shots, but my opponent doesn't have any shots, that's fine. But when you take those turns where you arc dodge, as best you can, but your arc's pointed the wrong way and your opponent still gets like one or two shots and you're not answering back with anything, you know, those turns can be pretty costly. All it takes is, you know, a good roll from your opponent and some bad defense on your end, and you're suddenly way behind. And so you really just want to minimize giving your opponent that opportunity. If you're not putting pressure on, you better make sure they're not being able to put any pressure on you.
Well, and pressure is so vitally important in X-Wing, because if you're not putting, like you said, Carson, if you're not putting pressure on your opponent, they're going to put pressure on you. And that means they can just execute whatever strategy they want. So if their list has a win condition and you're not doing anything to impede that win condition, well, they just get free reign of the board and they can do whatever they need to set up. So one of the reasons I like really like John's list is because you have so many firing arcs there where there's not like a good spot for them to necessarily arc dodge. That's a lot harder to do. And even if they blast past the arc's forward arc, they could still maybe take a, you know, at range one, a three dice shot out the rear arc. That's not good either. Maybe use Seventh Fleet Gunner on that, make it a four dice range one attack. So, you know, you want to make sure that your opponent is constantly under pressure from you to be careful about their decisions so that, you know, they can't play these really optimal moves. There is always going to be some trade-off there where maybe this gets them into the attack range they want, but then they're also going to get shot at by your ships. I think where a lot of people fall short is that they fail to take necessary risks, where, you know, sometimes you might need to take a risk, even if the payoff might not be great for you, where if you're not putting pressure on your opponent, they just get to do whatever they want.
Yeah, and that might not really cost you the game, you know, within, you know, the time you make that decision, but it'll give your opponent the time to really create a winning strategy for themselves. And so you might not notice it till quite a few turns later. All right, so the next reason that people lose games, I think, is one that gets overlooked possibly the most. And that's really where, you know, the main fight or the engagement takes place in the wrong section of the map for a player. And sometimes you don't really realize it, that you were in the wrong spot till you look back on the game. This is something I definitely notice when I'm watching stream games, is, you know, especially when you can just zoom through it really quickly, you can see how the obstacles, you know, perhaps created really tough choices for one player and open things up for another player.
And this connects a lot to setup too, where, you know, I always say that if both players are placing rocks in the same way, well, one of those players is wrong. You know, one person's going to get an advantage from this rock setup over the other person. And that really comes into play here when you're looking at where you actually engage, especially, you know, the first main engagement you have in a game. If your opponent is getting to decide where you engage, they're going to set up a scenario where you're limited in options. Either your attacks are obstructed or you don't have follow-up moves after the first engagement. So a lot of games can be lost, even if you might have a list advantage over your opponent where, like, the raw matchup looks good for you. If it takes place on the wrong part of the game mat, that can completely eliminate the advantage or even put your opponent in an advantage.
Yeah, so when I'm setting up my battlefield, I usually am trying to create a space that is going to be very favorable to me. Now, I don't always get the engagement to happen there, which, you know, sometimes my opponents recognize that's not going to go favorably for them. They're good opponents, and they're not going to go into my asteroid trap. And so that kind of makes me think that I made a mistake in setup. You know, I created too favorable of a position for me, and my opponent wisely identifies they want nothing to do with that. And so perhaps it would have been better for me to spread out my obstacles so that I get, you know, at least a slight advantage wherever the engagement takes place. And that, I think, is tough to identify because you don't really know if your opponent's going to fall for it until you've already placed everything.
And it's one of the more interesting points, I think, of X-Wing gameplay, like in the first several turns, which are hugely important because, like, your first engagement can really swing a game either way, especially if it's connected to some pretty extreme variants. But that's such an interesting thing where, you know, the actual area you engage, even if you're engaging, like, in the same hemisphere, like the right side of the board, if it happens closer to your board edge or their board edge, can dramatically impact what the following turns look like. Where, you know, you move in, suddenly all your K turns and S loops are blocked off by asteroids and your opponent is free to flip around all they want. Well, that's a huge advantage for them to just keep, you know, shooting at you and actually keep putting pressure on you too. And I think this is something people don't consider enough, because when I'm setting up a game of X-Wing, not only am I placing my ships, you know, if I'm placing later than them with aces, then I'm trying to figure out where they're going to want to engage. And I'm going to try and steer them towards me so that they can't avoid me completely because they're afraid I'm just going to come up and, you know, push some damage out on them. But if they do turn in on me, I want them to be moving into an unfavorable position, which, you know, something I can easily escape from, but they're going to be having to deal with, maybe losing actions, maybe taking stress from debris clouds.
Right. I mean, and so this is something I look at, particularly when I have a bad matchup where, you know, on paper, just the exchanges of our ships are not going to work in my favor. I'm going to try and use those obstacles as much as possible, because if someone's, you know, perhaps a little overconfident in their list's ability against mine, well, then I think they're perhaps more likely to give in to a suboptimal battlefield because they think their list favor is strong enough. So that gives me opportunity to level the playing field.
And a lot of what this comes down to is understanding your own list and knowing where you want to, you know, where you want the first engagement or with the general, you know, bulk of the battle to take place. You want to know where that's going to be most favorable for you, and you're going to want to know where it is for your opponent. And it varies from, you know, list build to list build. So aces can deal fine with, you know, some tightly clustered gas clouds because they get a pretty big advantage from those. They already have a lot of agility dice. Whereas if you're running a bunch of medium or large base ships, you need to be aware that the more closely you place debris clouds or especially asteroids together, that's going to limit your potential maneuver options and barrel roll options.
And I think what's really important about this point, too, is if the battle does take place in the wrong section of the map, there are a number of really good ways to tell that that happened. So the last two points that we made, you know, the one about putting offensive pressure on your opponent, if you set up that engagement on your terms, it usually means that you are putting the pressure on your opponent. If you engage on their terms, they've put the pressure on you. So having that optimal engagement set up in a way that you're getting the most benefit out of it can minimize that chance of failing to trade a good piece. If the engagement's on your terms and in the place where you want it to happen, the likelihood that you will lose the engagement is significantly lower.
Totally agree.
All right, so these last two points dive a little bit beyond the mechanics and a lot of the gameplay of X-Wing, and it go a little bit more into the psychological factors or the factors that are outside of your direct control. And this first one is one that for a long time I fell victim to. And it's something you have to really overcome if you want to move on from being a beginner or intermediate X-Wing player and really playing at a high competitive level.
Yeah, and I personally think this is one of the easiest ways to lose a game. And I too kind of fell into this pattern a lot early on in my playing career. So, and what that is you basically mentally concede the game based on what your matchup is or based on early variance in the game. So if you, you know, get up to a table at a tournament and you look across and you see something that you know is a bad matchup for you or that you didn't want to see, and you kind of just concede to yourself, oh, I'm going to lose this game, so, you know, why even put effort into it?
And part of X-Wing is understanding that there are going to be bad matchups. You know, there's kind of a general, you know, super rock, paper, scissors feel to X-Wing where some matchups are just really hard for a given list. You know, flying the high ground list with Annie, Obi, and Rico Lee, sometimes I'd go up into a matchup that I was not fully prepared for. It would maybe be some scum nonsense with tractor beams and stealing tokens with Polyb Gadalhi. And that's pretty psychologically damaging because I know I'm not going to be able to kill those ships particularly fast. And all their, you know, main abilities do pretty well against my three small bases. They tractor me, throw me onto rocks, and then steal my tokens, so I'm just defenseless. And if I'm defenseless and I can't shoot, then my ships have a really hard time. But going into that game, I can't assume that just because there's an advantage that my opponent has that I'm necessarily going to lose the game. Because there's so many more factors that affect a game that you can't just focus on matchup as being, you know, an absolute determiner of winning or losing.
Right, and I think this is something that I definitely struggled with through a lot of my competitive career. You know, you get some bad matchups, and that's tough. But also, like, there's players that I looked up to and just thought, you know, they're a lot better than me. And so my chance of beating them is just very low. And I think that's something that, you know, eventually you're like, well, you know, they're people too. And maybe I'll get lucky this game. And if you psych yourself out and kind of just check out, you don't really give yourself that opportunity.
Now, matchup isn't the only factor, though, where you can psych yourself out. There's some more practical things that are truly not your fault, necessarily, that can really swing a game and make you pretty discouraged early on. Dice variance is a part of X-Wing, and the fact that it can, you know, vary wildly means that, you know, you might go into an early engagement and you might get a really bad roll of variance. You might roll in with your ace, you've got a focus and an evade, and you're expecting to avoid a bunch of damage. Your opponent rolls three hits and you just blank out. You spend your evade, but you're almost dead now, and things are looking pretty rough because you have to play on the defensive with that ship from this point forward.
Right, and so this is incredibly tough. You know, when you get, you know, you have an expensive ship that, you know, just disappears really quickly in the early game without really getting a chance to answer back on your opponent, you know, you're behind by a lot. And, you know, a lot of players just kind of mentally check out at that point. And for a long time, I did too. And you kind of, when that happens, you kind of just have to be like, you know what? No, I'm not going to lose this game. Just because you got that lucky early thing, I'm not giving up yet. You know, a lot of times it can balance out eventually, but you have to really dig in and, you know, pull out all your tricks. And, you know, when you do pull it off, it's awesome. Like, this is, I think, the best feeling where you're down by so much, but eventually you come back. I think, you know, for me, I had a game a few worlds ago where my Fenrao just blanked out, got one-shotted with a direct hit. Where against a ship that had initiative 11. And so he didn't even get to fire. And so I was down a third of my list. And still, you know, with a Hawk and a Shadowcaster, managed to pull out a win. I had to use everything in my arsenal. And it was a very narrow win, but that's probably one of the proudest wins I have. Because on paper, that game was over.
Well, and that's one of the cool parts about being forced into a desperate situation is that can really actually cause you to innovate and develop new strategies where things you wouldn't necessarily plan for, where, you know, wildly bad variance in what should be a favorable engagement. But once you're in those environments, suddenly you have to develop new ways to win. Most of the time you might lose, but sometimes you'll figure out a strategy to help you dig yourself out of that scenario.
Right. I mean, at that point, what do you have to lose? You've already lost. You know, try something crazy. It might work out.
Yeah, and I mean, you just have to identify, what do I need to do to get back into this game? Because taking risk can be a huge part of that. And maybe the expression I would say is that it's better to make a risky play that will probably cause you to lose than a safe play that will definitely cause you to lose. You know, don't play defensively knowing that you're going to lose in five turns. Make a bold move that maybe your opponent's not anticipating, and suddenly you might get some good variance that can swing the game back the other way.
Right, I think, you know, more practically, you want to identify, okay, how do I get back into this game? And so I think, you know, when things go bad, this is just a really great question to ask yourself. Because, you know what, you are losing at this point, but, you know, the game's not over. There's still a lot of time left.
Yeah, just because you're losing a game doesn't necessarily mean you will lose the game, right? Because nothing's decided till you hit that 75-minute mark. So you need to go into that avatar state and, you know, figure out what you need to do here in the most desperate situation to win.
And even if you are losing, part of the game might still be going your way. And, you know, you can use that to your advantage to try to bring back your win condition.
Yeah, you know, if you enter a scenario where maybe your ace took way more damage than you expected, but I got one of my flankers behind my opponent too, I'm going to leverage that advantage a lot to put more pressure on my opponent so that they can't then focus in on my suffering ship or whatever was negatively influenced by bad variance.
Yeah, maybe one of your ships disappeared a lot quicker than you expected, but, you know, the engagement's taking place where you want it. And so now you can use the obstacles to your advantage or the lack of obstacles to your advantage.
And I'd say either way, you really should play out games, especially at a big tournament, because you don't know. There might be some variance swings in your favor. And it's good to play it out. You know, if you see even a really skilled X-Wing player play a game that they're losing and things aren't looking good, they usually, if they concede, they won't concede till the point where there is just basically no statistical chance at all that they can win. Even if they're down to, you know, one little ship that's damaged versus three ships, if there's any likelihood that they could get a good advantage or play a really smart turn, they'll continue to play that out. You have to wait until your Y-Wing's stressed and there's three ships behind you before you'd probably like actually concede a game verbally.
Well, and playing it out is so important for a couple different reasons. I think the main is because it'll influence your future matchups. So when you're at big tournaments like this, you know, there are going to be other people that have the same record as you, or in the event that you do get a pair up or a pair down, you know, might have something that is actually a really good matchup for you. And, you know, having the chance to win future games is really good because we now have, you know, tournaments like Gen Con where you can get prizes based on best in faction. So, you know, even if you're 3-3 with Separatists or whatever, you know, play that seventh game out because you might get some cool prizes out of it.
So one point that's interesting that is not necessarily connected to gameplay or what list people bring is you can actually psych yourself out and mentally concede. This used to happen to me a lot when I was playing against, you know, one of the big names in X-Wing or someone I considered to be a better player than me. This happened first locally where there were a lot of great X-Wing players in the Twin Cities area. So I would get a little psyched out playing against them. And then as I started to play, you know, more, you know, large scale events across the country, I'd get paired up with a known name, someone who's on a podcast or something. And that can be really intimidating.
Yeah, podcasters are pushovers. Don't worry about it.
I certainly am.
Yeah, I guess I mentioned this a bit earlier, but yeah, I mean, it's something I definitely did too. And like I've been guilty of it this year even. So it's something you really shouldn't do because usually the difference between you and someone else is like pretty small. And I think the best thing to do, you know, even if you are a little nervous, you know, just think about your strategy. It's probably a pretty good strategy and just stick with it. Don't really overthink your game plan too much.
And don't assume just because someone has won a lot of accolades in X-Wing, you know, they still lose games of X-Wing. You know, even the best top players who perform consistently well at a ton of events, they're still losing some percentage of their games. So, you know, you might be one of those losses on the way there for a lot of different factors. So really try not to get influenced by thinking someone's better than you, even if, you know, you might say they objectively are. Focus on your strategy, focus on the game you're playing, and try to play the best game of X-Wing you can.
Well, and it's really a great opportunity because the way that you really get better is, you know, playing against people who are better than you. And so, you know, seeing what they do and just getting that opportunity to play on that playing field and see, you know, okay, how do I size up to someone who I think is better than me? And you know what? If it goes your way, it's a real awesome feeling.
All right, so now we get down to probably the most difficult topic to talk about here. This is one that comes up a lot.
This one's my favorite.
This one comes up a lot in X-Wing discussions. People asking, is X-Wing a dice game? How much does variance impact your game? So one of the ways you lose X-Wing is through dice variance, meaning sometimes you enter a scenario where you need the dice to go one way. It's statistically likely, maybe, that they'll go one way, and then they just completely fail you, and you enter a scenario where you cannot win, you know, based on what you rolled.
All right. So the way I look at this, you know what? Like, variance is real in this game, but everyone kind of gives themselves a little bit too much room and freedom with it. And to some extent, like, that's okay. It's okay to complain about it a bit. But if you want to be honest with yourself and really minimize the number of losses you get at an event, you have to be honest and can really consider all the other factors before you look at dice variance. The way I kind of put this in perspective for myself is, okay, at a, you know, say 6-round event, I think it's pretty okay to lose one game. And so that is the game that's okay to lose to dice variance. If you're losing more than one game, they probably weren't all to dice variance.
Yeah, I think this is something people struggle with. It's something I struggled with, too, when I'd have a really bad or like statistically unlikely roll. You need to avoid the inclination to blame everything on dice variance, because if you lose, you know, maybe one game at a tournament to dice variance, or like a really important game to dice variance, that can happen. That does happen to people in X-Wing. If you think every game you're losing is because of bad dice variance, I guarantee you that's not the main factor here. Probably not even close to the main factor.
Yeah, the reason you got to that point was probably because of some decision you made or series of decisions you made. And that could be any number of things. It could be turns where you got overly aggressive and it didn't pay off. It could just be the type of archetype you're using. You know, with an ace list that is so dependent on dice variance, you know, to survive those multiple shots from mid-range and efficiency lists, like, you have to be prepared for that and, you know, at some point expect it to happen. So mentally preparing yourself for that dice variance to not go in your favor a couple times can also give you kind of an edge.
And, you know, sometimes your whole game might swing on a given round or a given set of rolls. But an important thing to remember there is, even if, you know, the game goes one way or the other based on a roll, The game state was built by all the decisions that were made by the players up to that point, as well as the variance up to that point. So just because your game gets down to a moment where it swings on one pivotal moment, you know, the reason you're in that position and the reason that role is so important is because of a lot of factors that, you know, occurred along the way. And a lot of them are things you can control. You can make decisions that put you into different scenarios.
Right. I mean, so this is, I guess, the one reason that you might lose a game that I really don't dedicate too much thought to, because, you know what, like, it does happen, but it's not something that's really helpful to you, even like acknowledging it, because even if, you know, you lost a variance, there was still probably some decision you could have made better. And it's just way more helpful to you to identify, you know, what those decisions were, because that's how you win those future games. You're not going to roll better the next time.
Yeah, of all the things we talked about today, this one you don't want to focus on for the reason that this is the one you really cannot impact at all. All the other things we talked about are things that you can improve upon and you can improve your game upon, but dice variance is something that is beyond your control. So you cannot dedicate most of your time to worrying about it. You have to dedicate your time to recognizing the other weaknesses that you have that are actually within the realm of improvement that you could make.
And at the end of the day, X-Wing is still a skill game. So, you know, preparing yourself and making yourself a better player can give you tools to deal with bad dice variance when it does happen.
And you know what? Like, it's not easy to be honest and say, you know what? I lost because I made a mistake. Like, that's tough. But, you know, if you do want to improve, you do have to make that tough, honest acknowledgement. So when I lose a game, I go through this list, you know. Did I mess up on time? Or was there a key ship I gave up where I really shouldn't have put that ship in that position? You know, did I just not put enough turns of rolling red dice on my opponent? Or, wow, you know, I thought I just got outplayed, but really I was in the wrong spot and all my decisions were just really punished by where the obstacles were.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like we reiterate, like dice variance is a real thing. Anybody who would say that dice variance is not a factor in determining outcomes of X-Wing games, that's just not an honest stance on it. But at the same time, like we said, you know, once you get to the point where the dice variance makes the outcome, start rewinding from there and going back to decisions you made that you could have done better, because that's the only thing that's going to improve your, you know, ability to play over time. This game is not, definitely not a dice variance game. You know, we had a 3-time world champion 3 years in a row. So there's obviously factors that stretch well beyond the dice here that determine outcomes. And, you know, dice has been a part of the game and dice variance have been a part of the game since its conception. It's one of the main things from first to second edition that really didn't change at all. So it's always been a part of the game and it's always been something you have to plan for and deal with. So the best thing you can do is try to improve all the factors that you can control.
And winning obviously feels good and nobody really wants to lose, but losing a game is one of the most productive ways to make yourself a better player. You know, take the mistakes you made, learn from them, improve upon them, and then you'll have better success in the future.
And, you know, it even goes to the side where if you win based on some extreme dice variance, you know, be humble about it and recognize that, all right, this is the reason I won this game. What decisions can I make next time so that I'm not dependent on, you know, one big swing?
Oh, absolutely. I go through this list kind of win or lose. Usually there's always something you can be improving on.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/radiotcx and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really like the show, consider going on iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review saying what you liked and why you think other people should listen.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, folks, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. All right, everyone should have audio recording. Keep an eye on those so they don't stop.
Okay, and then Carson command goes to save. Garage you band.
Can command save periodically.
Oh, shit. I don't think I did it. I pressed the wrong thing.
You're the youngest baby boomer I've ever met.
I press R, right?